Dave Fanning on 2FM. 2FM.
Now, 2019 might seem like a distant memory at this stage, but in the last week of last year, something interesting was happening in the UK music charts. In Ireland, Lewis Capaldi continued to dominate, but in the UK, a Joni Mitchell cover by Ellie Goulding was quietly sitting at the top spot of the charts. So the single, by the way, it wasn't available on Spotify, it wasn't available on Apple Music, it wasn't available on Google Play, but it received little or no radio play. And then, you know, the question is obviously, well, hold on a second now, how could that possibly be number one? Or what does the top of the charts even mean anymore? Well, BBC music reporter Mark Savage is with me now to tell me how it happened. First of all, Mark, thanks for talking to us on the programme today. The last UK number one of 2019, it was only available on Amazon Music and YouTube. How, therefore, did it get to number one?
For the simple reason that it was an Amazon exclusive, which means they had commissioned it and Ellie Goulding had recorded it. And then Amazon put it on pretty much every single one of their Christmas playlists. So anybody who got an Echo speaker or an Alexa-enabled speaker over Christmas and said, Alexa, play Christmas music, they will have heard that song at least once, sometimes multiple times within the same playlist, and each of those streams counted towards the chart.
Right, so the fact that we know that streaming counts towards the charts, which is dodgy enough. I mean, the old days, you got the bus into town, you handed money to a human being, he handed you a 45 or whatever it is, and you went home and played it or whatever, and there was, okay, I'm sure there was a tweaking here and there, but in general, it was easier to kind of, you know, ascertain who really fancied what and who spent money on what, wasn't it?
Well, was it? Because I remember buying singles, you know, from my favourite artists. I remember buying The Fly by U2 back in 1992 because I was a massive U2 fan, and I got it home and I played it and I thought, what on earth is this rubbish? And I didn't listen to it again for about another 2 months until Acting Baby came out, at which point I was like, oh no, that song is actually quite good. And it just taken me a while to get used to it. What the charts are measuring now is consumption. So all those people, yeah, who may have maybe once bought a record they hated and left it in the discard pile or taken it to a charity shop, they don't count. If you listen to a song over and over and over again and you actually love it, then it has more chance of getting to the top of the chart. So yes, it's moved away from measuring purchasing to measuring consumption, but maybe that's a more accurate measure of working out what people really like.
Yeah, but really like and really working to get is a different thing. But we leave that for the moment.
I mean, that's
like,
true.
If it was loaded into Christmas playlists, and I'm talking here about Ellie Goulding with a song, by the way, not called Christmas, so it's not like it's helped there. It's called River, even though it's coming on Christmas, like cutting down trees, make a lot of money, singing songs of joy and peace, etc., being the opening lines. How come the classics like, you know, Mariah Carey and Wham didn't snatch the number one?
So this is the interesting thing. The way that the UK charts are worked out, this is all Ed Sheeran's fault, by the way. If you remember, a couple of years ago when he released his album Divide, 16 songs of his went into the top 20 in a single week, which just, you know, it showed that people were listening to the album in their droves, but it also made a bit of a mockery of having a top 40 countdown. Mm-hmm. So what the official charts company who compiled the charts did was they established two rules, one of which is that you can only have three songs in the chart at the same time. And to combat this idea of a song sticking around forever and ever and ever and choking up the charts and not letting new artists get a look in, they introduced a rule called ACR, which means that for the first, you know, initial period that a song is out, every 150 streams counts as one sale. Once a song has been around for a certain amount of time and its sales have started to drop off, then they need 300 streams to count as a sale. That obviously applies to any of the old Christmas songs, whether it be Wham or Mariah Carey or The Pogues. So they had to be streamed twice as many times as Ellie Goulding for every chart eligible sale. So actually, in that week running up to Christmas, Wham's Last Christmas set the new record for the most streams of a single song in a day. 17.1 million times people played Last Christmas in the UK over 24 hours. But it was being weighted against in the chart analysis, which means that it didn't end up at number one.
But one of the things is that it's an old song, whereas Ellie Goulding's version of River is new. So
that's
therefore,
right,
did that squeeze out all the old favourites like Mariah and Wham, etc.?
Yeah, exactly. They're all subject to this weighting that counts against older songs. And, you know, in a weird way, that was introduced partly to stop the Christmas charts being clogged up by Christmas songs. It didn't work, you know. And what was really interesting is in the chart subsequent to the Christmas chart, there were 39 songs, all Christmas songs, dropped out of the top 40.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's something about the way all of this is compiled now that I'm not going to believe any chart anymore. I don't care. Like, when you say they, who are they? Who makes these decisions?
It's the official charts company. So they're an independent, although... what's the word I'm looking for here? They're independent, but they're allied with the music industry, and they collect all of the sales and streaming data and put it together every week. The interesting thing about this, in my opinion, is that there is a big difference between saying, Alexa, play Christmas music, and just letting it all wash over you, and saying, Alexa, play me the new Ellie Goulding song. Because I want to hear it. And I think the argument should be that that kind of lean back listening shouldn't count towards the charts with the same emphasis that actually choosing to listen something does. So if you go into Spotify and type in I want to hear Nick Cave's Ghosteen, one of the best albums of last year, then those streams should potentially, in some people's opinion, count for more sales than just, you know, the kind of Today's Hits or New Music Friday or Rap Caviar, all those curated playlists that you don't have any hand in choosing yourself.
Yeah, but also in simple terms, the Ellie Goulding track isn't even the most listened to artist of that week. She was simply the most listened to of new releases, and they get a head start over all the other ones. So, I mean, like, for instance, are you telling me the last UK number one of 2019 belongs to Jeff Bezos? I mean, does that mean that Amazon are gaming the system here, are they?
I think to a certain extent they are. They'll be very pleased with this result, because obviously every news story that said Ellie Goulding had the last number one of the year mentioned that it was an Amazon exclusive, and perhaps everybody who owned an Amazon speaker went out and listened to that song. And, you know, there's the fascinating thing about this is there is the potential for the system to be gamed. There was a big outcry a couple of years ago about fake artists appearing on Spotify. A lot of people were seeing in their recently played list bands they'd never heard of, who had no online presence, whose songs were, you know, kind of very short, kind of mood music, but they were appearing and appearing and appearing in people's playlists. Now, it turned out Spotify said that some of them were actually having their accounts cancelled and that the system was being gamed. But it would be easy for a streaming service to start putting music of its own into playlists and to therefore receive the royalties for that music, and thereby water down the amount of money that they have to pay to real artists and major labels.
So this was a very successful and very deliberate campaign, if I can say that, because, you know, unless you went through any of the paid for music services or whatever, Echo devices, like, all you had to do was say, Alexa, play some Christmas music, and it could easily be that this one would come up because it's one of the new ones. I mean, was there anything else that was in the running that could have? Like, what was number two and three? Was that other Christmas songs that were brand new?
No, they were Last Christmas and All I Want for Christmas Is You. So they were very close to actually, taking the crown, but they didn't quite. And a lot of people had thought Mariah Carey would do it, but she
did
quite.
In America, did she?
She did in America, where they don't have that rule.
And
that
nor here. So, like, I mean, is this basically the age of the smart speaker?
I think an increasing amount of listening is happening on smart speakers now. I find it interesting. I don't know about you, but, you know, when I was growing up, it was all about getting a hi-fi system and having, you know, the best speakers and separate CD players and things like that. Now everybody's listening on laptop speakers and in mono.
Yeah, it's gone back. Yeah. Remember Ringo used to wear the badge, back to mono. I don't think he realised just what would actually happen. Okay, so, like, this is not just the age of streaming then. This is the age of the smart speaker, and that's the big difference, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's I find it interesting, you know, as a music journalist, when I meet people who are young music fans and I ask them how they find new music, they quite often say, oh, I'll just put on a song I like on YouTube or a song I like on Spotify, and then I'll let the algorithm tell me what to listen to next. They're not seeking stuff out. They're waiting for it to come to them.
Will the charts therefore have to change yet again? Will there be an adaptation needed in the next couple of years if Amazon are in charge of everything now?
The charts are tweaked fairly regularly anyway. They're constantly reviewing the algorithms that they use and the data that they use and trying to make it the most accurate possible reflection of the way that people are consuming music. You know, in the past, we've had, you know, in the past, they used to include VHS videos that people sold. You know, Madonna sold a VHS of Justify My Love. Then there was mini disc. Then there was DVD singles, cassette singles. Do you remember buying cassette singles?
Yeah.
And now it's streaming. There might be another technology in 5 or 10 years that we'll have to include into the charts to make them reflect what how people are listening to music.
Well, I don't find this necessarily honest, because like you, there's no blood, sweat and tears in actually getting to a track anymore. You don't have to work to make money to pay that guy over the counter, as I mentioned. But like, was there a time that the chart meant so much that it was at least as accurate as could nearly be? I mean, for instance, Rod Stewart in the early 1970s, I remember that he had this thing where he had Every Picture Tells a Story and also Maggie May, was number one album and number one single in Britain and number one album and number one single in America. And there were figures shown of just how many he was selling. And I mean, selling is, as I say, blood, sweat and tears across country. Like, he was selling millions every week. Now, the point is that, like, are you going to tell me that, well, actually, it wasn't as accurate as you might think there, Dave?
Well, certainly in the UK, up until, I think, the 1990s, when they had, you know, barcodes and point-of-sale tills, it was all done by a selected number of record shops writing down in a little book.
Yeah, and sold. Wide open to manipulation,
and
I can tell
you. Absolutely. And, you know, record companies knew which shop was selling which records, so they would send somebody down to buy 30 copies of their single and get it up the charts and then get on top of the pops and hopefully translate that into real sales.
Has the playlist killed the album?
Oh, I don't know. I still listen to albums. I think a lot of people still listen to albums. I think if you look at somebody like Beyoncé, where she drops an album on a single day, out of the blue, often with a lot of videos on it, that's a way of concentrating people, isn't it? You want to be part of the cultural conversation and you have to listen to that album all the way through to hear the narrative. There are other artists like Calvin Harris who aren't that interested in making an album. They're all about the track. And there's always been singles bands. I mean, I think Madness were the classic singles band in the 80s, weren't they?
Yeah.
And so it depends on the type of listener you are and the type of artist that you like. Some people are all about making those big, bold statements, and some listeners want to hear those. Other people just want to go clubbing and listen to the songs they heard in the club.
All right, well then, finally, Mark, I mean, like, who does it benefit here, or does it benefit the artist? I mean, is the way the charts are set up beneficial or prohibitive for new artists?
Well, I think all of those rules that came in the wake of Ed Sheeran taking over the charts a couple of years ago were designed to make sure that new artists weren't being squeezed out by the big behemoths of the music industry. So Ed Sheeran can't take up half of the top 40 anymore, and that gives more chances, you know, to up-and-coming singers. You know, Lewis Capaldi at this stage last year, you know, on the BBC, we've just announced The Sound of 2020 and all the artists that we think are going to be big for the next year, people like Celeste and Joy Crooks and Inhaler from Dublin. You know, they all have more of a look-in now than they would have done 3 years ago. But it's still up to them to engage the fans and to find a fan base and to get people to stream their songs. And there's a multitude of ways to do that now. In some ways it's easier, in some ways it's harder.
OK, BBC music reporter Mark Savage. Mark, thank you so much for talking to us on the programme today. Thank you. See you, Mark. Good luck.
Cheers. Dave Fanning on 2FM. 2FM.